I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 465, the pseudo box office report for the week ending March 31st. It's a good thing that the week ends on the 31st, because if it ended tomorrow, all the box office numbers would be fake.
That's true. We wouldn't really know. We'd have no idea.
Dumbo made $1.
Disney would buy more tickets for whatever they were, you know, for Dumbo.
Oh. So I guess before we forget, we should probably go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. I guess quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. Also, swing on by our Facebook page. It's a great place to go and discuss the show after it posts. If you have thoughts or if we got something wrong or if we were too woke for you, you can go there and tell us how we're all a bunch of libtards.
So, I explained the review to some friends last night, and they're just like, I don't get it. And I was like, no, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. So you can also, while you're at our Facebook page, if you were kind enough to go there, share the show and join the League of Show Sharers. People who were kind enough to join the league this week.
Oh, that's back.
Right. It is back. For a while, Facebook, for some reason, wouldn't let me click on the share button to see who had shared it.
And Facebook was broken for like 2 weeks.
They had all kinds of weird things going on.
Now it is functioning again, so it has returned, thank goodness. So people who were kind enough to share the show last week, and actually in the last 2 weeks because I went back an episode.
Oh.
Richard Lawson, Brad Hyen, Jason Weese, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Dylan A. Lang, Tom Comiskey, Griffin Fox Smith, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Timmy Tuzoons, Chris Sanders, Travis Tewitt, Tammy Sherman Powers, Chris Magic Man, Ralph Tribble, Lane Levanway, Julianne Jordan, Ron Johnson, Brent Smith, and of course, Librarian Cynthia.
Of course.
So thank you very much. And thank you for still sharing, even when it was dicey as to whether or not we would be able to read your name. But you still were committed. So
we appreciate you.
We like you extra more.
That's right.
So that's a thing now. Extra more.
Extra more.
I'm going to say that.
More extra.
Yes. No, extra more.
Do you remember, it's another weird conversation. Do you remember like gum ads? Like when chewing gum would have ads.
I mean, they still do. You're just not the demo.
I guess that's probably
right?
true.
Like they don't advertise gum to 40-year-olds, right?
I'm 37.
Close enough. Yeah, right. You know what? 1834.
That's true. Yeah, so I'm already out of the demo. It doesn't matter.
You're not. And honestly, gum wouldn't even be 18 to 34 for the most part. It would be like 12 to 18.
Did Extra have a, because there was Extra gum, right? Did they have an ad? Because I remember like Double Mint. And Big Red.
What's the statement of a great man?
Is that what it was?
With Double Mint gum.
The Double Mint twins.
Yeah.
And then there was the Big Red jingle.
Double your pleasure, double your fun. What that's right. I mean.
Yeah.
But I remember my dad used to chew Extra gum. And I was, and
was that like 9 cents at the checkout?
It was also like, no, like I felt like it was with like Double Mint and Big Red, like whoever gum company that was. But I always felt like that was a taste that nobody could ever replicate because it didn't taste natural. Like Spearmint, you're like, okay, it's a little bit spicy. Or Big Red, it's like cinnamon. This one, you're just like, I don't know what this is. It tastes like maybe juicy fruit.
Well, even juicy fruit doesn't taste like anything.
Juicy fruit has no discernible flavor, and it only lasts about 3 seconds before it's just like.
Now I'm just chewing a piece of rubber, I guess.
Yeah it's pretty bad. I mean, at least Fruit Stripe tastes really good for three seconds.
Fruit Stripe, you were.
If they could handle that flavor and make it stay, they'd have. Willy Wonka, baby. It'd be over. Yeah. Everlast.
An interesting movie related anecdote for Juicy Fruit.
Yeah.
So in the movie Paper Moon.
Oh, yeah.
There's a scene where they're staying at a hotel.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get the guy behind the counter to go up and have sex with the girl, Madeline Kahn's character. So it would break up the relationship between that girl and her father.
Dad, right.
And so. The guy, who is a character actor, you've seen a million times. He was in Blazing Saddles and
Steady as Rock.
Yeah, he's got the kind of the big teeth, and he's all very, very corn pone, you know. And there's a scene where he's like, you want a juicy fruit? There's gum on the counter, and he's selling her juicy fruit. And so when they were making that movie, the director, Peter Bogdanovich wanted to
not the guy from Guardians, Kevin.
So he wanted them to have a gum, and I forget what gum it was, but they needed they emailed the company, or not emailed, they called the company. They
sent a paper moon.
They sent a wire,
telegram,
and they were like, "Oh, but we want to use your gum in the movie, but we need what the design looked like in like 1931."
Oh, sure,
you know. And they were like, not going to do it. So they went with Juicy Fruit. And this movie's made in, I think, 73.
Okay.
And they went with Juicy Fruit because Juicy Fruit had not changed their product design.
That's awesome.
Since the 30s. And now it's the 70s. And what's And what's funny is, like I was watching this in the director's commentary on the DVD, and Juicy Fruit at that point had still not changed.
Well, it's a yellow wrapper that says Juicy Fruit on it.
But they hadn't even like the logo or anything.
Yeah.
And then about 4 or 5 years after that, they finally like tweaked
the
Juicy
Fruit.
Just
changed the font on the logo,
like now
basically.
It looks different. It still is evocative it's different. But I just thought it was funny that they went like.
Funny.
They went like 70 years without changing anything about the look of their product.
Who wouldn't want to have their gum featured in a movie like that? I mean, people
didn't realize the value of product placement until the 80s. It was it was E.T. is what really kicked
with
that in.
Reese's Pieces?
Didn't they not want
to? It was supposed to be M&M's, and M&M's was like, what are you going to pay us? And Spielberg was like, no. What are you going to pay us?
Yeah, you don't know. That's not how this works.
And then Reese's Pieces stepped in, and
I don't like Reese's Pieces.
I don't either, but, I mean, it saved that product. That product was about to get shelled.
I like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you
see
they have chocolate lovers and peanut butter lovers now? Where it's just, like, mostly chocolate with a little peanut butter, or mostly peanut butter with a tiny ring of chocolate?
It doesn't matter. They're both wonderful.
Well, right.
Look, there was nothing wrong with the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Yeah, you can't go. You can say.
And they're not. I mean, you can buy either one. It's just they offer varieties now. They offer them with Reese's Pieces inside the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
That's too much.
Oh, I like
it.
I mean,
I don't like it.
There's the white chocolate, which is awesome. I love white. It's just white chocolate and peanut butter.
Yeah.
So
just give me the original.
I know. But, you know, I think, though, that.
I can't have those in my house. Like, because they'll
just disappear. Yeah.
If the kids get them for Halloween, it's like, well, that's mine.
Yeah.
That's mine. That's mine. That's mine.
We used to have that same problem with Sudafed around here.
Oh, gee.
So
that's mine. I'll take that.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Like, oh, man. So, but yeah, so there's a long, winding story about gum.
Tom is actually sick and can't get Sudafed because.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that might have occurred.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I was just kidding.
So I guess before we get into the box office report, we should start by wishing a happy birthday to Batman.
We should. Yeah, 80 years. That's
happy birthday.
Well, I guess technically, it's if it's 80 year, it's 80 years for Bruce Wayne.
Yes,
it's
correct.
Only like 50 years for Batman. Right, yeah.
That's true. That's
I think that's how the math works.
That's how the math works. Yeah, it's. Yeah.
I think the Detective Comics that he appeared in was
number
first,
27.
27 was yeah. first in maybe May of.
So Superman.
19,
Superman
so
was
like,
Superman is June of 39, 38. And
is that when it really came out, or is that
that's the cover date?
Is that the BS cover date that
well,
never has any relation to where you're at in time?
I feel like in the 30s that probably was.
Yeah, because the game that they, the reason those things don't match up is because it's supposed to be a pull date,
right?
Of when the magazine distributors would pull them off the rack,
right?
And so the publisher started putting the dates later and later yes. to get more time on the,
correct.
On the rack.
I feel like in 38 that. Though yeah. that was probably the current.
So,
and also the twist tie on your bread, the different color is a code for when they can how long it's been there. So the guy that stocks bread
is that
can,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez.
But you're 100% right though. The cover date was May of 1939. Release date was March of 1939. So it yeah. is Batman's 80th birthday.
Whenever you're editing this, can you pull out the part where you say you're 100% right? I'm going to make it my ringtone whenever you call me.
But yeah, it's it's kind of cool. Like a character, they have doubled down on his birthday more than the character that created DC Comics, but that's neither here nor there as far as I'm concerned.
He's just the most popular.
You sound a little bitter.
I am a little bitter. Like, it's difficult. So, like, they...
But here's the thing to keep in mind is Batman's better.
All right.
At the end of the day, right, when we look at facts...
Right.
Just,
like,
I can't dispute that he... But if you show somebody the Superman S... Anywhere in the world.
What about the Bat logo? Any Bat logo.
I feel
and
like
Joe knows because he shows his ass all the time.
All the time.
He's constantly showing his ass.
I think he
ass.
Has an S on his ass.
Yeah. He does have an S on his back, I'll tell you that. But no, like, so they did a bunch. So from when Action 1000 came out, they did variant covers out the wazoo.
Yeah.
A bunch of, past, sure. present, are guys who you haven't really seen. The ones they didn't do, which I thought was kind of interesting, is Alex Ross. So Alex oh. Ross didn't do an Action 1000 variant, which I would have bought instantly.
You'd think him being a prolific
he's kind
of
a Superman
artist for
guy.
Superman.
Yeah, absolutely. He didn't do it. But he did do two of them for Batman.
He does a lot of Batman stuff.
He does a lot
too,
of Batman
though.
Stuff. Have you seen what those are going for?
The paintings?
No,
nope,
the covers themselves.
No, what?
Up to $400.
For just a...
For the cover.
Variant that has...
So they did... obviously they did... There's... I mean, I don't want to say hundreds. Lots of variants for these covers. For this comic. And he did an exclusive. So it's a recreation of Detective 27.
Oh, is it just at a con or something?
No. I don't know. I think he must have sold it either through like a comic shop or through
right,
his
website.
Right.
I'm wondering, it must be really limited.
It's very limited.
Okay.
And they sold out pretty quick. Friend of the show, Brian Spath, has one of each because,
Yeah.
And did not pay that much. He paid way less than that. But yeah,
I wish I would have known. I didn't even know.
Yeah,
there's some great covers, and Kevin Smith wrote Detective 1000.
He wrote. It's a collection of stories, and
he wrote
one of them.
One with
Jim
Lee.
But that's what a great team up. One of my favorite Batman artists.
Yeah,
and Kevin Smith is.
What is?
They're all like 8 or 10 pages,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I think it's like an $8 book, and you get a bunch of. You get like so. What they did in action.
They didn't try and do like a $45 hardcover.
There is one that exists.
Yeah,
oh, that's a graphic novel.
Yeah, right.
There's a bunch of stories. I think Greg Capullo does one in there. There's some Neil Adams one in there.
Is there one about when Batman finds out what Superman's mom's name is?
No, because nobody wants to talk about it. We could talk about that later. Who was your first Batman creative team that you remember?
I mean, the first story I read, like, I don't want to say as a grown up, but I was 17.
Sure.
But, not as a little kid. That I like really got me into Batman was 10 Nights of the Beast.
Ooh, with KG Beast?
Uh-huh.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Good call. Is that Legends? Was that Legends or was that in Batman?
No, that's in Batman.
Okay.
But yeah, it was 10 Nights, the introduction of KG Beast.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and it was funny is what got me was like, I was reading comic books, but I was really reading more indie stuff because it was like the numbers were so
were
high.
Were you reading, like, Too Much Coffee Man?
I don't think that was around yet. But
Scud the Assassin?
I was reading a lot of licensed stuff.
Sure.
I was reading like Speed Racer and Johnny Quest and stuff, like all the Now stuff. And then, but it was so hard to like jump into a series because the numbers were so high and it was just like, I don't even know where to start. It was kind of intimidating. And then when they did 10 Nights of the Beast, it was like they branded it at the top as like, at the time, I think they were referring to them as a miniseries within a series.
Sure.
And so it was like, oh, 10 Nights of the Beast, part one. And I was like, oh, well, okay, it's issue 419 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's 419, but but I was like, well, but it's the beginning of a storyline. Okay, I'll read this, and I really liked it, and then just started buying all the Batman. In, like, I was Flint. On.
I think for me it was probably Death of the Family or Death okay. of the Family. So that's Alan Moore and Norm Brayf. No, Jim Aparo.
Okay,
but Jim Aparo and Norm Brayfogle were like the two guys. When I saw Norm Brayfogle drawing Batman, I was like, yeah. Why am I not reading more of this?
Yeah.
And did that you was ever it? Read the new one? It's Which really one? Good. The Death of
yeah,
the Family.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have
like,
been.
That's a really good. I love that whole
Scott,
Snyder
Scott,
run.
Scott Snyder is a very. Capullo. It's interesting. Like they had a very good run.
That team,
and
I
Scott
wish it
Snyder
never
has
ended. I just,
yeah, well, they're coming back.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah. they were the best. You, they rejuvenated those comics
out of that New 52 run. That was one of the very few ones yeah. that was good from start.
I was
to
on
finish.
Board. Yes, every single one they teamed up with, and then when they talked about their run was ending, I'm like, ugh.
But I will say, Tom King is killing it. Yeah. Like Tom King is writing one hell of a Batman run, and he's had a.
Well, he's the king.
He is the king, and it, I mean, he did the Mr. Miracle run. He did the Vision run. Like he's got a very good take on Batman. What about you?
Yeah. So, you know, I would say probably Neil Adams as far as okay. like the Batman proper comics. And he's still one of my favorite artists. I love his take on Batman.
I have my, yeah.
Okay.
I think like
I love his,
that era, that 70s yeah. era of Neil Adams is untouchable.
Yeah.
I think the Neil Adams now is not.
Oh,
good.
I'm talking about the.
Yeah. Okay.
The,
okay.
I mean, that style was amazing.
You wouldn't have gotten to Dark Knight without Neil Adams.
Yeah. Nope, I mean, agree. His style and yeah, the tone that he set for it. I love it. So my first Batman comic that I ever actually read though, and I still own this to this day, was the adaptation of the 89 film.
Jerry Ordway and Denny O'Neill.
Yeah. I have the comic.
St. Louis's own.
That's
Denny
right.
O'Neill.
Denny O'Neill. Yeah.
So that was the first one. So like when I was a kid, I got that somehow. I don't even remember
There's extra script pages in that book.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the extra scenes that weren't shot for the movie that are in that comic.
I just like, I always kept it and I found it, you know, a few years ago, just going through my stuff and I'm like, oh, I remember this.
I remember when they first debuted that image of him in the suit and I was like, F this. I want nothing to do with this.
It's in Time Magazine.
Yeah,
it was a little blurb at the back of Time Magazine.
Yeah,
black suit.
Yeah, I was like, no,
as opposed to blue and gray.
Yeah, well, like back then he had the gray spandex with the blue cape and the blue cowl,
right.
And like the yellow and black bat and the utility belt. And I was like, no.
But how goofy would that have been in Burton's world?
It would have been awful.
Right? Like, and think about it. Since then, it's been black. There's been some gray thrown in. But I mean,
The Snyder one was gray and black, which was very Frank Miller-esque.
But still, like, the tone. I mean, yeah, Snyder added the gray in, but it's like, that suit has been pretty much black since then, and look where it came from before that. So it's like, that has become iconic.
Absolutely. And it's funny, like, I think, looking back on it, I actually think I like Keaton's Batman more than I may like Christian Bale.
I
mean, he's leaps and bounds over Affleck.
Go back on the episodes. We had this argument before. Who's your favorite Batman? Who's your favorite Bruce Wayne? I said Keaton is Batman a long time ago. There's something about that Batman. Even though I know he had to wear a chin prosthetic, and I know he couldn't turn his head, but there was something intimidating, and maybe it was because it was set in that universe. But he was a freaking scary Batman.
Yeah, he was very Frank Miller inspired, more so than.
Yeah.
Affleck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really cared. I didn't like the Clint Eastwood baby talk thing that Christian Bale does. Like I really liked those movies, but I liked them in spite of Christian Bale, not because of
Dark Knight movies or Captain America movies. Which trilogy is better?
I would go
Dark Knight.
I'd go Dark Knight.
Okay. Yeah. So are you basing that on the Dark Knight or as an entire trilogy?
I mean, the last one, it doesn't hold up to the first two. But it's not awful, you know.
I think I go with Cap.
Yeah,
as a whole.
And I it probably has to do with me, Batman being my favorite hero. But like, I mean, I would say Dark Knight. And I'm a Dark Knight Rises fan. Like, I know people hate on that movie. I like a lot about it. It's not as. I mean, it had to follow up The Dark Knight, so I totally get by comparison. But I mean, I think it's pretty solid. And there's a lot of like that sewer fight. The sound mixing with him fighting Bane in the sewer is awesome. I just think that's such a cool scene.
Yeah
I like those movies a lot. But Burton stuff's interesting, you know. He wasn't a comic guy, and it's not like he even loved the character.
True. I think he was a comic guy.
No,
but he read the comics though, right? Like, he was a comic
for the
fan
movie, I guess. No, he did not want it.
Well, that makes me not like him even more then.
Yeah, he was he was not a comic guy. And so he didn't even, we talk about Zack Snyder not understanding the character. Tim Burton didn't really understand the character, but geez, what he did for
understood him
for
more than
Batman
Snyder ever
and
did.
Superhero films, like,
You know,
I think
I mean?
He understood the character from a visual standpoint.
Who?
Totally.
Burton.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
the
I think
gothic
he was,
and
yeah.
The, yeah. And then, you know, Zack Snyder got out there and ran his mouth again. Which is just like,
it
I feel
hasn't stopped for the last two.
I can't figure this guy out. Like, that's the thing is like, he's.
I think he might just be going a little nuts, like from everything that happened. And I feel really sorry for the guy.
If that's the case,
awful.
That's awful.
I think he's just really stressed out. He's been out of the limelight now. And I think he's trying to get his foot back in the door of Hollywood because, you know, he basically had to leave / got fired / whatever you want to say about his. He was the head of the DC movies.
Yeah. And they were tanking.
And he's gone. And so now you have all these people. You have Wonder Woman, Aquaman, the Shazam, you know, and these movies are making so far the last couple $1 billion.
Right.
And they're succeeding where he had Batman and Wonder Woman
and Flash
and Superman.
And, yeah.
And he couldn't do it. And so I think that that's got to hurt your ego. That's got to hurt. People trash him all the time, which I don't think he deserves. I really like Zack Snyder.
So I think he deserves it based on his current catalog.
Yeah.
I
mean,
don't think he deserves it for, you know, I know Watchmen gets a, you know, Watchmen 300. They are literal takes from the page.
Yeah.
And you can't, I mean, as long as you just copy what they did on the page,
but
you
not
can't
everybody,
split it up.
But not every person can make that.
That's a lot of people's complaint
correct.
About it, too, is that it's too slavish
oh.
of an adaptation.
Oh, I disagree.
Oh, I love it. I think it's
I like Watchmen, but yeah. but I also get the take that it's like, well, maybe there's a middle ground.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah,
but
sure,
but
sure.
I'll tell you what, we talk about this a lot, and I think we're going to talk about it on this next movie, but not everything animated or comics can translate properly. Like, they try to translate things, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And so it's not as easy as it seems. Just going, oh, well, it's a literal translation. It's like, well, you try to put that page on the screen like Snyder did.
Right.
And so I think Snyder doesn't deserve the hate. Now, his understanding of the characters, his Batman, I get it. He screwed that up.
Well,
his
idea works for the Watchmen.
Yeah.
Like, his take on superheroes works for
Watchmen. Right,
but
so the Batman stuff,
for...
so I totally get that, but people trash him just because of Batman, just because of his Batman stuff. People trash him as a director. I mean, rake him over the coals, and
yeah.
he has done some great stuff. Like, I'm not a Zack Snyder hater. I don't agree with some of the things he's talking about now, but I feel bad for the guy, and again, I mean, he's gone through some traumatic stuff.
He has.
I think getting raked over the coals by everyone, going through what he did, being kicked out of DC, basically, you know,
yeah.
being forced to retire, you know, it's just like,
it's interesting. Like,
like, he didn't want to. I knew he had to step away, but like, he didn't want to leave that whole pro. Like,
well, hell no, he didn't want to leave that.
You know
paycheck.
What I mean?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's like, it's just
he's still getting a producer's credit.
That's true.
Don't cry yeah. for him, Argentina. yeah.
But it's, I guess we should say, like he said, if you don't think Batman or these other heroes don't kill anybody, you know, grow the F up is basically what he was saying.
But it's like,
and it's just like, that's not. That
go talk to 80 years.
Well, that
of,
that's like that statement alone is the reason you're no longer part yeah. of this thing.
But you know what though? But he's pandering because his supporters love that
oh,
stuff.
And people have already
that's the world we live in.
I was gonna yeah. say people have already started to compare the alt-right with like the Snyder fans.
Isn't that crazy?
Who will like defend this
yeah.
stuff to the end.
It's, I mean, if you're a Snyder fan, I'm not saying
no,
you're,
you love what you love.
I'm not saying, but there are similarities in the actions and the mantra of
the fee,
it's
the,
like
the
way that
fervor,
I mean,
I guess.
Because
that's the right word.
Like, I was on Twitter and, you know, there's my first mistake, but I was on Twitter and someone said something about Zack Snyder and I said, oh my God, what do you say this time? Because again, it's 2 weeks. I'm going to mute Zack Snyder in my keywords.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, it's been 2 weeks of straight crap. And then now people just make up things and misconstrue. But I said, oh my gosh, what is he in the news for today? And then my friend on there went and said, oh, this, that, and the other. And then, like, I kid you not, like five
it's
released
bad,
the Snyderverse guys
yep.
jumped on there and started, you know, just being very rude, insulting both of us. You know, well, if you're stupid, if you don't get it. I mean, so think about that mentality.
Yeah,
and I'm not, again, I like Snyder and I'm not like that. So listeners, I'm not saying you are that if you like Snyder, but those people that go off the deep end.
Right. The folks that have all the time in their day to go on Twitter and respond to
just look for anything that someone
correct.
Says
if they just like, search the keyword Snyder
and they're looking for negative
and
ones
they just
so
go it's like I don't know like I get it if that's your thing I don't have time for that like I enjoy a back and like if we get into a heated argument
yeah,
or a heated conversation I don't even mind a heated conversation
yeah.
as long as we are having a conversation and you're like you suck at life
Well, that's
but they're
okay.
not having a conversation. No. These people are not. And so I have a lot of great conversations on Twitter about film with people, and I love it when we can end with, yeah, well, agree to disagree. I get it. I appreciate your points. Here's
I feel
mine.
Like agree to disagree is like the most passive-aggressive thing, which is like, yeah, you're wrong, but I don't really want to
well,
have this conversation
you can't,
anymore.
You'll keep fighting. No, until, will, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm right. saying after you make your points, you can't. What are you going to say? No, you're wrong, which is the bad thing, right? And so
right.
I like it when you can end a conversation. It's like, yeah, good chat. That's how it should be, but the Snyder stuff has gone off the deep end. And you know, and it's great when you support someone and stand by your director and you love them. That's wonderful. But when you can't even see, like, you're not even, they're not listening to anyone's side. Like, they're not even open to hearing, like, right. yeah, I like his visual style in this. But with Batman, he doesn't get it because of ABC. They're just like, blah, 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 Batman kills.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, what?
It's one of those things where it is hard to even engage in a conversation anymore. Where it's just like, this isn't going to go the way you want it to.
Yeah.
You know, like this is just going to, it's going to go bad. So what's the point? But anyway, so yeah.
happy birthday, Batman.
Happy birthday, Batman.
Yeah. And I guess, the movie Us had a bit of a,
yeah.
I saw the title. I didn't get into it though. So what is,
so apparently, the actress, I have so much trouble saying
Lupita Nyong'o.
Lupita Nyong'o.
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 It's like an apostrophe Y.
I hate people with apostrophes in their name.
Tom?
What?
Don't.
There's no apostrophe in Tom.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. T apostrophe O-M.
Yes. That's how I would spell it if Tom. I was a character in Avatar.
You might have a chance. I heard he's, you know, really can't find enough people for those sequels.
Yeah, I was like, no, thank you.
Oh, is he still putting people in those movies?
He's like, I need 7.5 billion people, so please come to casting.
So apparently she said that she based the vocal performance
of Red
on a condition known as spasmodic dysphonia.
Okay.
And so she said that it's what inspired her, this is her quote, it's a condition that comes from trauma, sometimes emotional, sometimes physical. It creates this spasming of your vocal cords that leads to an irregular flow of air.
I was wondering, like in the movie, yeah. you know, it was kind of jarring because I'm like, why is she, like, it's interesting to know she based it on something real.
Yeah. Well,
like,
I took it talking to that like that in the movie. It's two things. One, she probably hadn't talked much.
That's
and it's like whenever you wake up, your voice sounds kind of. And so multiply that by 30 years.
And she was always, she was like smacking her and, like she had a like dry mouth.
Yeah. And she didn't have anyone to talk to.
Right.
So her language skills had probably atrophied. To
sure.
some. So it was a combination. I'm not saying people with spasmodic dysphonia don't have language skills, but that her character would not have been communicating verbally for 30 years. So it would have been a, you know, muscle that,
right.
You know, it's interesting. And I know there's a different effect and I don't mean to stop you right in the middle. I know you have more to say, but the, I don't want to spoil it, but we've seen characters. There is a character in the movie that,
we already did spoil it.
Well, yeah, but they're not listening.
The
oh, that's
report.
True. Yeah. That's
so I'll just say there's a character in the movie that, is, in the same arena as the other people that can't talk, like everyone knows there's like weird shadowy creature, whatever the other people are, right?
Right.
The them as opposed to
the
us or whatever. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't know that, but they're called the tethers. Okay. So there is a character that is a tether, but unlike them who don't really talk, they are able to because over the years they learned language. And I know they had more of an exposure to it, but it's interesting that Red wouldn't have been able to teach the other anybody else, right? Because just
right.
like the other one learned, and again, that's only one person, but you think that they would have, if they're going to lead an it's hard to get in without spoiling,
right,
you know,
right,
you
yeah.
get what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I do.
I'm surprised that there wasn't a teaching there, because we saw that it could be taught. It was just because they didn't
well learn. And I have a theory, but then now we're spoiling the movie.
Okay.
Right,
sign
right
up
right.
for that, but
yeah,
but anyway, so with so the people from the spasmodic dysphonia Institute.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they, you know, they were less than pleased,
sure,
about, you know, the idea of, and it, you know, it is something that you see a lot of, like somebody with some sort of a disability becomes a character trait of a villain,
like the guy from Casino Royale,
people with scars,
people with scars.
Oh yeah,
exactly,
scars
is
the
thing now.
Yeah. What was that? What movie was that?
Who
where
was
it
that said I will not be in direct a movie or be in a movie that has the villain as scars.
Was it a Bond movie?
I don't think it was a Bond movie, but it was a director. I don't know, but it's scars. Someone went after facial deformities and scars and said, well, there are people like that out there, and these bad guys always have scars. So
I feel like it, maybe not.
Yeah, I'm of two minds because I get what they're saying. Like, I really, you know, I really do like, yeah, that's a good point. And but then on the flip side, I'm just like, but I also know, like, you know, actors.
But how am I supposed to know what's a bad guy?
Actors are trying to find a way to make a character distinct from
right.
other characters, and so almost anything that is not regularly occurring in human development is termed some sort of a disability.
Yeah,
and so anything you choose from is going to be an affected class,
right?
And so it's a dangerous road to go on, especially when they weren't saying that this character has that. She just used it as a jumping off point. And honestly, I don't know that I've ever heard anyone with spasmodic dysphonia I don't know how close her version of speaking is to what someone with that disorder actually speaks.
Yeah, I've
like.
Never
but
heard
when they
of
give an explanation of what the disorder is, that's that character.
Right, that's the interesting.
But I think her definition wasn't quite right from what I've read. That they
okay.
they said it's a physical thing. It's not inspired by trauma.
I gotcha.
And so that was part of their complaint, is that they're like, this isn't a traumatic response to trauma. It's a physical situation that they have no control
I
over.
See, I
but,
see.
But, you know, that's neither here nor there, because even if she did get it right, the groups would still complain.
Oh.
Like, people complain about people that do it
right.
very well, just it's because they're doing it at
right.
all. So that's not even really the issue. So I don't know. It's tough. I mean, it's tough because we don't have a lot of these traits. I mean, I don't know, fat guys in movies maybe were, but,
yeah.
you know, I just, we don't.
I'm so upset about Oompa Loompas.
Yeah. It's hard to say, and I don't want to dismiss their feelings, because
yeah.
their feelings, I mean, they're entitled to their opinions.
Sure.
And I get where they're coming from, but.
Now, if someone with spasmodic dysphonia is a Snyder fan?
No.
Well,
now what?
Get him out of here.
Now what do you do?
Out.
Yeah.
So on that note,
yeah,
we should probably turn our eyes to the box
That's
office.
Probably true.
Yeah.
Kevin has his abacus.
This is why we
ready.
Can't have nice things,
Kevin.
I do, Tom. And the movie of the week, without a doubt, is number one, and it has made $49 million. So I don't know what the projections were on that one. I mean, it's not exactly taking the world by storm. I mean, it's a Disney movie. It's a remake of a classic. But yeah, $49 million. Take it for what it is.
I think it's doing... I think that's probably about what they wanted for
right.
something like
you think
that.
So?
Yeah, I mean, it's doing better than A Wrinkle in Time. Not as good as The Jungle Book.
Yeah, Mary Poppins opened at 23. So geez,
but that was also in a very contested field.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that movie
it
has
was,
legs. I mean, that you know, like
that's true.
That. I mean, that movie stuck around.
Right.
You know,
I think also I feel like Dumbo isn't as popular.
No, I,
you know what I mean?
I, when you look at, like, what's your favorite animated film? I mean,
Dumbo's not on there.
It's a classic. I mean, maybe with an older crowd, I think, because they have fond memories.
Sure.
You know, yeah. if you went to the theater and saw Dumbo, you're probably going to be like, oh, I love it. It's a classic. But, you know, people our age were all the 90s.
Yeah, it's the ones that they're making. It's the other ones they're making. Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion
King. Those
King.
Are our,
like,
yeah.
That's the.
This but, doesn't have the same audience as
no.
those.
Yeah. So. But just for comparison's sake, it's 50% ahead of A Wrinkle in Time.
Which was not good.
Well, but that,
no.
that
I know, but I have
yeah.
more.
Oh, no, sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's
well, thanks, Tom, for that great comparison.
yeah.
So moving on to number two.
It's 52% behind The Jungle Book.
Okay.
So it's 30.
And that was a massive movie, too.
Yeah.
Like, that was.
And it's 33% behind Cinderella.
Okay. Yeah. Which was also very good.
And then 120% ahead of Pete's Dragon.
Now, Beauty and the Beast, though, that's another relevant one. What that did some good numbers, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't have that.
I was looking for it. I couldn't find it on this chart either. But
well,
so
that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that was at least 2 years
ago.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I think for Dumbo being the property that it is, you know, I think I agree with Tom there that they're probably happy with that. But it doesn't compare to the other properties, especially the 90s properties. Like,
where does it rank with Tim Burton's movies? Out of curiosity.
Oh, as far as his...
Yeah.
Well,
didn't Alice in Wonderland make, like...
Yeah, so I can...
Alice in Wonderland made a
stupid
ton
money.
Well,
money.
That movie was insane. So, yeah, I actually do have openings, and it's just domestic, but I'll tell you.
Okay.
No, it's not on there yet. I was like, it's Dead Last. So let's see. It would be. Oh, well.
It's pretty close to Dead Last.
For Tim Burton, now, not adjusted for inflation, but it actually beats out Batman Returns for the number four spot. Batman Returns, again, 1992, so it would be more adjusted for inflation, but $45 million.
Isn't that crazy? 92?
Yeah.
That's crazy money.
Cow.
That's a lot of money.
I mean, look at an 89 Batman, 40. That's just opening weekend. And talk about legs. You know that movie.
Oh, yeah. That movie was a juggernaut.
So, but, I mean, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was, you know.
Oh, that made a bunch of money. 14, I forgot that made a
that
bunch
of money.
That was
14 years ago, though, still, but $56 million. Planet of the Apes, which somehow that made $68 million.
He owes Kevin Smith half that money.
And then Alice in Wonderland, 2010, that was the juggernaut. That's his most successful one by far. Opening, $116 million. That was the Avatar thing, though. That was a year after Avatar.
Oh,
3D
was it?
Was hot. I mean, it was...
Johnny Depp was hot. It was a perfect storm.
Coming off of Pirates, 3D. It was...
Yeah. And an established property with an established... Yeah. With an A-list director with a giant movie star coming off of a giant franchise.
Right.
Targeted to children. But had nostalgia. I mean, just like everything. And it's an awful movie. Don't get me wrong. But
it was a 5-quadrant hit, I think.
Yeah, but from a business standpoint, right?
Yeah, it was
massive
fire. Yeah. So Alice in Wonderland, for reference, 2010. Geez, almost a decade ago. $334 million domestic.
$1 billion.
Thank you for jumping ahead of me there.
Sorry.
But $691 million overseas alone. So it's just incredible what that movie did,
man.
And the second one couldn't replicate that.
No,
he didn't direct it. Anyway, so Dumbo with around 50. I mean, yeah, we'll see what it continues to do.
I just think it's gonna get swallowed up.
It's gonna get swallowed up, and it does not have good word of mouth for the most part.
We'll get into it. There's a reason.
But yeah, I mean, so but you know, sometimes bad word. It's different when it's just critics, but all around, you know, the buzz on the internet is a Twitter with.
Yeah. Ooh, good word.
Yeah. So we'll get into that movie next episode, obviously. So coming in at number two is Us, the movie of last week. So, I mean, 55% drop still brings that one to $32 million. So, I mean, look at those numbers, $126 million on a little Blumhouse horror movie.
Do we see a budget on that?
I think it was higher than normal. Yeah, 20.
It's about double
what he's been doing. Like it used to be 5. Yeah. Then the Prestige ones got up to 10.
Oh, yeah. What Blumhouse?
I was like,
he's made 2. How are we casting?
No. The Blumhouse was always 5 million.
Yeah.
It was always 5. Then it went to 10 for like the Prestige. You got some really big actors, whatever. He went to 20 for this one, but 126 million domestic in 2 weeks. And if you go overseas, we haven't even been to overseas yet. I don't even have my passport. 23 million overseas as well. So you're up to around 150 million in 2 weeks.
There's no way to see like what his budgets usually are. Like, is there a way to look up Box Office Mojo?
No.
Yeah, okay.
But sometimes you click on
Tim Burton, you can be like, okay, these are the listing of his movies. There's no way to look at like Jason Blum, right?
No, because I don't think they list budgets. They have like in that view. So if I can, I'll find it. But anyway, we know that it's been around 5, though. You know, it started
foot
real low.
Foot rubbing a bomb pop.
Yeah. Remember, now they get 2 bomb pops.
Even Halloween had like a $9 million budget.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like that's so 20 was a huge budget, but you know, there's a lot going on.
I think their biggest one was one of those Paranormal Activities that tanked.
Which is weird.
And by tanked, I mean it didn't make,
right?
You know,
it didn't make a billion. It only made 500.
Yeah,
million.
Right.
We know, we didn't discuss it, but Jordan Peele took some heat this week.
He did.
What did he say?
He said that they were asking him about casting in movies, and he said that he didn't see himself casting a white person in a lead film. And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I don't have a problem in the world.
So here's
with that.
The thing: if a white dude had said, right. I'm not going to cast
okay,
him.
But here's the thing.
No.
White dudes don't say it, but they do it.
Absolutely, they do it. But my point is, like, it would have been a...
Well, he would never work again.
He'd never work again.
Absolutely.
And you know what, Jordan Peele? You're totally in the right. I get that, like, as an African-American, you see the white dude in the lead role all the time.
Well, I think... To me, the key difference is that when he's saying, I'm going to cast black people in the lead, that's... To me, that's not robbing people of opportunity. That's creating opportunities.
Well, that's because, you can't take it out of context because what he actually says is he goes, I've seen that movie.
Right.
He's saying, I don't see myself doing that because I've seen that movie and I've seen that character before. Now, the who's the crazy old guy from First Reformed, the director of that?
Verhoeven.
No. Who's the, look up the first Reform guy. He took heat, remember, because before the Oscars, you know, and Ethan Hawke's up for an Oscar, and it's like, you know, and then he's saying this crazy stuff, and people are like, oh my God, you're just a bigot.
Paul Schrader,
right? So he got in trouble before the Oscars for first Reform. So Paul Schrader said something, and then far left jumped on it, but I don't think it was that bad. I feel like this
is a Brie Larson thing, but, all over again.
Yeah, but what Paul Schrader said was, he's like, hey, I've worked with all sorts of people in my movies. I've had main characters that are this race, this whatever nationality. And he's like, as an artist, you'll find out eventually, you will. Like, I think he was just saying, like, not saying you're lying or anything, but I think what Paul Schrader said, once you make enough movies, you're going to have a story that eventually there may be cause to have a white dude in it. And it's like, you're not going to, it will serve the story. I don't think he was being, you know, but then people are like, oh my God, he just can't stop, whatever. So, like, I don't think it was that bad, but. Anyway, but now anything Paul Schrader says automatically gets.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the first thing they always tell you when you're in writing classes is write what you know. And what he knows is the black experience. And I think that's part of the problem with white creators when they say, well, you need to put your casting to be more diverse. But sometimes, like, you don't know that world. That's a difficult story to tell. And then when you do tell that story, sometimes people are like, why are you telling that story?
Look at Maui. Or Moana.
Remember, there was an
argument about, like, the different, like, so Moana and Maui.
It was an amalgam of cultures.
Right, and there were people that were just like, well, it should be one culture. It should, like, you can't put a bunch together. Like, there was the costume.
And they thought, oh, well, we'll do kind of an amalgam so we're not
offending anybody.
Like, it's a fictional thing that pays homage to all, and then no. But, like, Spielberg is a good example of, like, not counting Color Purple or Amistad. When does he cast a black lead? Say it, but he does it.
Right.
But it, you know, and so, I mean, it.
I don't have any problem with what he says. Yeah. But the only thing is, I would say to him I would say I don't have a problem with what he said. But I am on the side of, like, well, just do whatever the story calls for. If you have the right story, don't not write the story because you can't, you know, because the lead isn't black or what, you know what I mean?
And I think he left himself an out there, because I do think Schrader is right. It's like, you're on your second movie.
Right.
Yeah. You don't know what sort of story you're going to want to tell in 30 years. Right.
Right.
And you might still tell a story that's very much about the black experience, but needs to focus on a white family
guy
to tell that story.
Exactly.
You know, I do think he gave himself an out where he didn't say, I never will.
Yeah,
he just said, where I'm at in this moment in time, those aren't the stories I'm looking to tell.
Sure,
don't see myself doing
it. It's a non-controversy.
Yeah,
it's in the same exact category as the Brie Larson stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing wrong or bad about being more inclusive.
No,
we're here as three white guys and we're totally on board with this stuff. I mean, you know what I'm
saying?
I think
more diversity is it opens up more opportunities for more actors and more creative people. B,
and more stories.
And more stories. So C, it also gives an audience something else they can relate to.
Yeah.
You know, I get, there's a reason Black Panther was as successful as it was.
Yeah.
You know, that's the bottom line.
You know why I think the people who are upset is because they're jealous, because he's making damn good movies.
That's
true. Like, Tyler Perry isn't casting white people and nobody's saying a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
people look at those movies as beneath them.
Right.
Right. And I think there's a lot of people that go see a movie like Us or Get Out and they really like it. And in their head, they play this game of, like, well, I mean, what, I could never be in one? Like, which you weren't going to be in one anyway.
Right.
But I don't know.
Halloween.
You can be that family and get out.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm just saying. Like, the chances of you being in one of his movies is not going to happen.
Well, that's the other thing. Is like, that's the trope in horror films and slasher films, is the black dude or black gal goes first.
Right. Yeah.
And so Jordan Peele is just doing a different take on that, where they're not going to go first.
Yeah.
You know, and they're the main focal point.
I just talked to Ernie Hudson yesterday for an hour.
What? His name. I was thinking, I don't know why I thought his full name wasn't the name that on it, like, you know, like Ernest.
No.
But Ernie. I was like, are you on the level where you can call him Ernie now?
I call him by his known name. Yes.
Yes, you did. I'm sorry.
He didn't make me refer to him as Mr. Hudson. So I talked to him for an hour. Super cool guy. I'm going to make a podcast out of it. I don't know where it's going to land or whatever. But
did you talk about The Crow?
Yes, I talked about
Talk about St. Elsewhere.
Yes, he brought it up. I talked to him for an hour.
Yeah,
I
think that's how he ended up on Oz, right? Because it's the same
creative team.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
Tom Fontana.
Uh-huh. We talked about Oz. We talked about St. Elsewhere. We talked about The Crow. We talked about, of course, Ghostbusters. Talked about his early career. Talked about Congo, which he loved being on, and I loved that growing up. Like, it's a great interview. Like, the guy had so many. He was so gracious. So many great stories. So anyway, it will be out there in some form, one way or another. But he even mentioned, and I think it was in regard to Congo, that like in some of those movies, you know, Congo kind of has a horror element where the gorillas are killing people and whatever. Yeah. And he mentioned, and I can't remember, but I think it was that one where he's like, you know, and it used to be like, you know, the black guy would die earlier, whatever like that. And he's like, I liked this character because I got to be the cool, like, in charge guy and whatever. And he didn't fall into that trope. And so even he mentioned that it's a known fact that it's been like that for a long time. And
sure.
So, I agree with you guys. I think it's great to have the inclusivity for all the different races and everything. The only thing I don't like is when it's forced. We've had some movies where it's like, this is an infomercial or whatever.
Right.
I'm all for inclusiveness, but when it's like, here's your token, this and that, it gets a little.
Like, yeah, it's like a Colors of Benetton ad.
Yeah, so, yeah. But I'm all for it. And like Black Panther was an amazing movie.
Absolutely.
I don't care that I didn't, you know, quote unquote, see myself up there. Like, that's not.
I was in for the characters.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
I don't. So my point is these nerds that grew up being bullied or whatever, and they found these comic book movies and could relate, and now they're the ones hating on them. It seems like such a hypocritical thing. And then you also have 10 million other things to see yourself in. So it's like.
Yeah.
It's just such a weird issue. It's a weird thing. So anyway, going through these, speaking of superhero movies, Marvel, Captain Marvel, with $20.5 million is a 40% drop.
And Marvel has started production on two more new properties. The Eternals, which mm-hmm. will be part of Phase 4, which apparently is going to have the first openly gay superhero, which from what I understand, it's going to be Hercules.
Some people are thinking that they're going to flip it and it's going to be Angelina Jolie.
Oh, that could be. But I thought they were looking for a gay male lead.
No, I don't think so. They just said the lead would be Hercules.
Oh,
but I don't.
Okay,
they
okay.
didn't say a gay male lead. I think they said there's going to be an openly gay.
The Eternals
character.
Like that's a deep dive.
Yeah.
That even like I've said that before, but I feel like I don't even own.
Oh,
I don't
watch what you say.
I know.
This is going to be the one.
Like I don't even own an Eternals comic. So and I like they're a deep cut. And then
I was gonna say maybe you should say deep cut if they're gonna add gay character. Maybe you shouldn't say deep dive.
Deep, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. And then they've
announced those maracas.
Shang-Chi, which is one of my favorite characters of all time. And if they do
is that an Iron Fist related?
Kind of like it's a martial arts character. Yeah, the
okay.
master of kung fu
yeah,
was
okay.
his comic. If they do like a Bruce Lee. Jackie Chan
apply
like,
that style.
They
to
do
it,
like an
yeah.
old school kung fu movie.
Yeah,
yeah,
that'd
all goddamn day.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So run through these numbers real quick. Captain Marvel. I don't even have finals for this weekend.
Look
but,
at that.
But 338.8 before this weekend. 607 overseas. $946 million in 4 weeks.
Do you think they expected that in four weeks? Honestly,
I can't imagine.
I don't think so.
And especially
no
with
way.
All the controversy helped them.
I think they thought they'd be probably in Ant-Man territory.
Yeah,
that's
500
yeah.
mil something
yeah.
like that, which is a ton of money still.
Totally.
But
yeah.
A billion in 4 weeks. No one saw that coming. And those trolls totally pushed it yeah. over the edge because then everyone went and like, well, if you're a good person, you got to go see it because there's these
right.
idiots over here. Like, I don't know how the things when the stars align like that are just bizarre. So
yeah.
anyway, making all the money. Number four, 5 feet apart, $6 million.
We'll get there.
30%.
That's not that ice movie where the kid falls in the water.
No, that's,
is it?
No, that's the breakthrough. This is the Disease of the Week movie.
Oh.
I already forgot that was the name. That's the 5 feet apart. Okay.
Oh,
right.
There it is. Yeah, okay.
So 30% drop with $6 million. So obviously it had the word of mouth. $35.6 million domestic on that one. Number five, Unplanned.
Which, so look, this is the anti-abortion movie.
I was totally
that's
like,
been taking a lot of heat. They were trying to run commercials, and a lot of networks, I think only Fox News would air it.
I feel like the distributor is PureFlix.
It is.
And that sounds like a porn company.
Whoa. No, it's the exact opposite. It's they, all,
sure.
all they make is Christian movies. So they made the God's Not Dead movies and that sort of stuff.
Is that Greg Kinnear?
Yeah.
All right.
I think it was in that. And then they also, their Twitter account got suspended over the weekend.
What did they get suspended for? Did they like post a video? Like,
of an abortion?
I mean, you never know. That's like if true. They're trying to be like, this is what, you know.
Westboro Baptist Church level.
I'm trying to see why it got.
Well, anyway, so.
So the problem that they ran into with this movie is that it got an R rating. And, and so it's the first time they've ever had an R rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's made it very difficult for them to market it, and then some people wouldn't
to see it.
Yeah, and you know, and then because then a lot of Christian outlets won't advertise R-rated movies. So even though this movie is overtly Christian,
they're like, no, thank you.
They're like, well, but we don't advertise R-rated movies, and so
I wonder why it had to be rated R.
They showed
if they're
legit,
trying to make
no, I don't know
if they're trying to make this get this message out there. Obviously, R rating is not.
I wonder
the way to do it.
Honestly, though, I wonder if the MPAA has a thing about.
Like, that subject matter
yes.
enough.
Yeah.
It's not language. It's not nudity. But it's like that
subject
matter,
matter
is. That could be
and
true.
And depending on what they show in the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I don't know.
We'll have to read up on it. But anyway, $5.2 million. So it almost made back its $6 million budget despite of the R rating. But, I mean, who knows who will see it in the second week.
We
so
won't.
We'll see.
I mean, we've got, what, Shazam coming out next week? And then we've got Pet Sematary after that.
Not exactly the same demo.
Well, I just mean like.
Remember how like Passion of the Christ, like they just kept bussing them in to go see it? So it's like, I could see that maybe. Maybe the crowd, there could be a market of if they rally or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the movie will probably end up doing well because people, you know, there's going to be a certain group that's
going
to go see it.
Keep
just
going.
Just
yeah.
to prove a point.
Right.
You know, because now the story is like, oh, they're not allowed to advertise it. They're suspended. Their Twitter account got unsuspended.
Now
but,
they're being censored. And not, you know,
yeah. And so I think people will probably rally
back
around
it up a little bit.
So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. But until then, Joe's number one of 2019 is Wonder Park with $5 million.
I thought this was
the Wallace and Gromit looking one.
No, I thought this was the one about like the dolls. Oh. Have you seen that one where like
no.
there's the ugly dolls and then there's like the pretty dolls?
Oh, no.
That's what I thought this was.
Because there's the Missing Link, which is like the Wallace and Gromit.
Yes.
That's like
yes.
next week.
Okay.
There's
okay.
a bunch of kids stuff dropping around this time.
It's
but,
a good time, though. I think a lot of kids are on yeah. spring break and...
So, I mean, $5 million is a 43% drop. I honestly am shocked that this movie has made almost $40 million domestic. I mean, just looking at it and from what I've heard about it, it is not good from what I've heard. You didn't see it, right, Tom?
No. Oh, no. Well, I was like, I took my kid to see Dumbo.
Yeah. So, it's around $50 million after this weekend. So, you know, I mean, good for it. I guess it pulled through. I did not think it was going to work out for it.
But it didn't have any, I mean, besides How to Train Your Dragon, there was no other quote-unquote kids movies in the Dan Graney theory.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess so, but it's going to have the problem now, though.
It is.
Coming in at number 7, How to Train Your Dragon 3 with $4.3 million. That's up to $153 million domestic, and it is $1.6 trillion worldwide. No, it's at almost $500 million. You know, so it's pretty good. For those movies, that's about what they have been coming in at, so it's about triple its budget, and it's a nice conclusion, so go listen
who,
to
who put that out? DreamWorks?
That's DreamWorks, okay. Yeah. DreamWorks SKG.
What's that mean?
Spielberg. Katzenberg.
Oh, okay. Is there a different
third guy? What's that?
No,
that's the company's real name.
Okay,
it's DreamWorks
SKG. I'm with you.
It was founded by Spielberg, Katzenberg, and I just can't think
Geffen.
Of it. Geffen.
Who's the Ron Howard? What did Ron Howard do? Didn't he have his own production company?
Imagine?
Is that yeah. Was that him?
I think so.
And Zemeckis had one too, didn't he?
Yeah, they all,
have
but
a company.
I guess I thought that Spielberg, Howard... and Zemeckis all did something together. Am I remembering that wrong?
Maybe they all are part of Imagine. I don't know. They're all tight. So,
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so now we're going to be jumping down to Limited, and it was Hotel Mumbai. One made $3.3 million, and it increased to 900 locations. So it got itself a little 3,600% increase. I guess none of us saw that one, but...
No.
That's
one of us did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Was it good?
It's really good.
I want to say that's Dev Patel, right?
It's really good. It's a very intense movie.
Yeah.
And I feel weird saying this because... Like I honestly did not remember the story. I feel awful for
is
saying
it. Real?
It.
It's
a true
story.
Like where there were like 12 attacks in India, like simultaneously terrorist attacks, and one of them was at the hotel at the Taj Mahal, and it's like the Taj Mahal hotel makes the Ritz look like a Motel 6.
Right.
I mean, they're
the Route 66 motel,
right? Yeah. And so, and so there's terrorists that take over that hotel and are killing people. And this movie's been taking some heat because people feel like the body count's too high. But I'm like, you know, I'm like, well, the body count is what the body count is. They're
right.
telling
you can't,
the story.
You can't
and like, there are lots of kills in this movie, and it's wow. just, and it's
like,
I mean,
like kills on screen.
Yeah.
And are they like Saving Private Ryan level where it's just very real?
Are they like action kills or like they're being gunned down innocent people?
Like,
or
they're just gunning down people.
You know what I mean?
And like,
you
there's
know, like,
a lot of like somebody's talking and then all of a sudden, bam. Boom, bullet Jeez. In the head.
Do you remember what I mean though? Like in Saving Private Ryan, there was a lot of killing, but it felt like if this were to happen in real life, this is exactly what it
that
would look
to
like.
Me is what a lot of this movie felt like. Like,
okay.
I mean, I don't think it's Saving Private Ryan level
sure,
good, but
sure.
But like I mean, this movie was very like nerve wracking, and you felt like you were in it, and especially because since it's not an action movie,
yeah.
like there isn't that. Well, I know this guy's gonna make it, or I know this, or I
right.
know at some
right.
point he'll get a machine gun, and then he'll get his vengeance. Jeez. Like
now,
like
I have a machine gun,
right?
Oh,
like you,
oh.
like you know. So it's like you know, and it was a super intense movie. It was really
to
well
give
done.
That a look.
And yeah. I honestly, I think a lot of the people's complaints are inadvertently compliments
huh.
in that
much like Captain Marvel
that they were so disturbed by what they were seeing that they're trying to be like that's not the way you should have made this movie but it's like
I see
you
I
know,
see
you know like
but
you've
real.
But you know you're trivializing it or whatever and but it was I like I said hesitate to say enjoyed but
you appreciated
but
the movie.
Yeah like I it was a really really good movie
well like mm-hmm. I mean 12 Years a Slave is an excellent film.
Right.
You know, Steve McQueen, Michael Fassbender, she would
Schindler's List.
Lupita Nyong'o. But I yeah. mean, like, you know, that's a tough movie and you don't watch it every year on, you know, whatever, on the regular.
Oh boy,
but,
it's time to watch
but,
12 Years a
but
Slave.
But it's like, man, that's a good movie. So there are movies out there,
right.
Schindler's List, like you mentioned, that like,
Requiem
it doesn't,
for a Dream.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's bad just because it's a tough
I feel
watch.
Like, I feel like Saving Private Ryan is on that level too, where
that's
it's just like,
yeah, it could be
man,
incredible.
I
yeah.
love that movie, but it is not one that you can, like to go back to your Twitter post, we're just like, what's a movie you could watch over and over and
yeah.
over? I could not watch Saving Private Ryan right. over and over
Someone
and over.
Someone today just put Get Out on there, and I didn't respond to it yet, but I was gonna be like, really? Like, Get Out's good, but I don't know if that's the most watchable movie.
I don't know. I mean,
like, for
the plays different.
The repeated viewings I've had, I've really enjoyed because there are so many things later in that movie
yeah.
that work differently when you know the ending.
Right.
But maybe they misinterpret it. Like, what I meant is, like, just pop it in anytime.
Sure.
Makes you feel good. Like, Get Out, I don't see as, like, my, like, oh, I'm just before bed, and oh, before,
right,
like,
yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, I'm doing the laundry, Get Out. Oh, I'm going, you know, I'm thinking,
sure,
like,
sure.
rewatchable, like, I put in Jurassic Park, or, you know, just something that's, like,
I threw
oh.
in Beverly Hills Cop the other day.
Oh,
yeah.
So good.
It holds up.
It does
I haven't
hold
watched
up.
It in, like, 20 years.
Oh, my God.
And I was,
it's
like,
that laugh.
Oh, God.
I was, like,
he puts the banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah.
Like, it's a,
I'm not falling for banana in the tailpipe. I guess I don't have to put on a fake white voice.
No, you could. No,
I got the real one.
You can use your real one.
I could just say, like, I'm not going
to
fall
I said,
for the.
I said mine
tip,
was Back to the Future.
Yeah,
you can. I can watch
yeah.
that every.
Yeah, exactly.
Every day.
I think that's nice. At Jurassic Park. It's
yeah.
just yeah. But oh, Judge
Reinhold.
What's Judge Reinhold up to these days?
Praying that he could look at Phoebe Cates one more time.
So anyway,
I don't blame him.
As we wrap up here, coming in at number 9, it's Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral with $2.7 million. The thing's at $70 million or 70.039. So that's with, I think, a 0.039 budget. So about $70 million profit at this point. And then rounding out the top 10 is Joe's, I think, number one most anticipated. Harmony Korine's return to the directing chair, The Beach Bum.
I was interested. Like, I did just see a trailer for this, and I was like, huh. That looks quasi interesting.
I mean, I'm down for it. It's McConaughey. You know, she did Spring Breakers with
yeah.
Franco. You know, Spring
I know
Break
a lot of people.
Forever.
I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people like that. I did not.
Yeah,
I hated that
it's
movie.
A, yeah, it's definitely a very like indie.
Ugh.
Again, that indie spirit. It's that
yeah,
art
that.
House,
yeah, for sure.
Whatever. But a great visual style. I think that movie, like
yeah.
the look of it, with
yeah.
all the you know, but. Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, I'm interested. I do want to see it. Zac Efron's got like the lines cut in the
yeah.
side. I mean, it's a very like it's just
he's supposed he might be in the running for Adam Warlock.
That would be great.
I think he needs to go to DC and be Kyle Rayner.
Really?
Yeah,
I could see that.
Or Guy Gardner.
Yeah. I'm
hell, I don't. You know what? Just make him
just,
a Green Lantern.
Yeah,
I don't care
like,
which
yeah.
one it is.
Make him the red dinosaur looking one. I don't care.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. No.
So anyway, but that movie made $1.5 million. It is limited. It's probably only East and West Coast, maybe a couple in between, but 105 locations. But yeah, $1.5 million. So we'll see what that continues to do. But I am curious about it. I mean, it's McConaughey.
Yeah, but it's not the McConaughey that we had gotten used to, what, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like during the was it 3 years ago? That's about right, isn't it?
Nah, I think it's longer than that.
I think it's like five.
Yeah. He's been doing some interesting stuff lately, but it's the
which I mean is fine. Like I appreciate like trying to just do different stuff. Like I get that
he doesn't want to get stuck in rom coms again for the rest of his life. So
well, yeah, that's
we'll,
true.
We'll see. So
or like you know Rust.
Yeah. So that's the box office report.
Well, thank you, Gavin.
You're welcome.
So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And if you want to find the show online, please do so at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. And of course, follow us on Twitter at Real Spoilers. And don't forget our Patreon account at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle Dumbo. Until then, you've been warned.
Everyone remembers the moment they fell in love with Dumbo on March 29th.
You have wonder.
Magic. For a whole new generation.
You can do it, Dumbo. Show them.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.